You're listening to Vatican Radio, and I'm Tracy McClure, and joining me today in studio is Monsignor John Kennedy from the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith. Hi there.
Hello, Tracy. It's great to be back again.
Well, I can't wait. We said last time we were looking at the Pope's new encyclical, Lumen Fidei, and we've already talked about what an encyclical is, and we've looked at Chapter 1. Today we're going to be talking about Chapter 2. What does it speak about?
Well, Chapter 2 has, of course, a subtitle, as all of the chapters do, and this subtitle is, "Unless you believe, you will not understand." This is not something that the Pope has invented, but rather he quotes the prophet Isaiah in Chapter 7, verse 9. In the chapter, Chapter 2, the Pope explores the intrinsic connections between faith and truth. He reminds us that faith enables us to see reality more deeply, to know the good, and in this secure knowledge, to stand firm in the course of our lives. Indeed, the deepest knowledge of truth comes through the love of God and of others too, which then faith enables. Our faith allows us to have a unique, trustworthy knowledge, stimulating a constant dialogue between faith and reason. This is a big theme that the Church has been looking at in the last couple of years, especially in the papacy of John Paul II and Benedict XVI. And in this chapter, really, the Pope notes at the end that the truth of faith is not something totalitarian or something which is imposed. It is a true gift for the common good.
Now, let's explore the dynamic between believing and understanding. What can you tell us? What does the text of the encyclical tell us about that?
It is, in fact, a very simple reality, this dynamic between believing and understanding. Believing is linked in an intrinsic way to understanding. Think of a child, for example. Your listeners have children at home. Children are always asking questions because they want and they need to know things. For our lives too, children, adults, we need knowledge. We need truth, because without these, we can't stand firm and we certainly can't move forward. Think of a courtroom situation. A court cannot hand down a verdict unless it actually gets the truth. Faith without truth doesn't save. If faith did not have truth, then it would remain nothing more than a beautiful story, the Pope tells us, an empty shell, or even the projection of our deep yearning for happiness, something capable of satisfying us to the extent that we're willing to deceive ourselves. So if this were faith, if it were our own concoction or our own invention, then it would be incapable of sustaining us on our steady journey through life.
You hear people often look to, you know, say science and technology are really what offer the truth today.
You're right. I've heard this comment from different people worldwide. In contemporary culture, we've often heard those who would tell us that the only real truth is that which comes from science or technology. In fact, truth is what we succeed in building and what we succeed in measuring by our own scientific know-how. Truth, people would say, in other contexts, is what works and what makes life easier or what makes life more comfortable. In the legal world, we've seen examples even recently. The truth of what we want in society is often measured by what we vote for, by the means of a majority. Nowadays, not so many people are concerned with the sort of truth that we used to talk about in the past, or the sort of truth we used to base everything on in the past. What we have today, or what we create today, appears as the only truth that's certain, the only truth that can be shared, the only truth that can be serving as a basis for discussion or for our common understanding. In discussions, people sometimes no longer feel free to say, well, I'm a Catholic and I believe this to be true because God says it's true, and because of all of these truths that have been handed on to us by our faith have in some ways been banished from public discourse. So it seems that we don't know about, or we don't want to think about, the existence of the one truth in the context of all of these other smaller truths. And yet, at the other end of the scale, we're willing to allow for these little subjective truths of the other individuals, which consist in fidelity to their own little deepest convictions, to actually have a greater value. In other words, we hear that there are many truths and each of them is valid only for the individual and only because he or she feels like it at that time. And those sorts of truths, because they're so individualistic, they can't be presented or proposed to other people as being a universal valid truth. And this is where the Pope comes in and he says, but truth itself, the truth which would comprehensively explain our life as individuals and in society, this truth of the gospel, is regarded with suspicion. Surely this kind of truth, we've heard it said, is what was claimed by the great totalitarian movements of the last century, a truth not that we arrived at ourselves, but no, one that was imposed and imposed its own worldview in order to crush the actual lives of individuals. It seems that society today is so sophisticated that it doesn't want to believe in the one truth, but rather in these smaller ones. And it's here that we return to a theme that was often spoken about by Pope Benedict XVI. And in the end, if you go forward with all of these ideas of relativism and with individual truths, you're left with a pervasive culture of relativism.
Could you explain the term relativism? Because it is something that we've heard so often, especially under Benedict. But there are many people who don't know what relativism is.
It's true. And relativism, then, is the concept that different points of view have no absolute truth or validity. They only really have relative or subjective value according to differences in perception and differences in consideration. The truth relativism project is the doctrine, really, that there are no absolute truths. Like, it's not possible to say this is absolutely right and this is absolutely wrong. Under any circumstance, whatever, we must keep to these principles. What they're actually saying is that truth is always relative. Well, you kind of have to look at it in the context, and it might be better to do this and it might be worse to do that, because there's always some frame of reference. There's always maybe a language that you have to consider, or always a culture. And another widespread and contentious form of relativism is moral relativism. So this means that if one thing is right, it's right for me, or it's right for somebody else. And then this ultimately means that the whole question of God is no longer relevant, because we don't actually need God. We make up ourselves what we want to be right or wrong. And then there's no bond between religion and truth.
So, this being the case, can the Christian faith provide a service to the common good with regard to the right way of understanding truth?
Yes. To answer this question, we need to reflect on the kind of knowledge involved in faith. Here, a saying of St. Paul can help us. One believes with the heart. This is a letter to the Romans. And they could pass over this passage of Scripture really quickly. One believes with the heart, thinking, oh yeah, you know, I make up my own truth. I believe things as I want to. It's how my heart tells me. It's how I'm feeling about it. But in fact, this actually gives us a key to understanding our lives, because when you go back to the Bible, and when you understand what the Bible means when it talks about the heart, it sees the heart as being the core of the human person, where all of his or her different dimensions intersect. So here we have the intersection of the body and spirit, the interiority and the openness to the world and to others. Here is where you have the intellect and the will and the affectivity. So all of the components making up the human person can be described in the biblical understanding of the heart. So if the heart is capable of holding all of these different dimensions together, it's because it's where we become open to truth. It's where we become open to love. It's where we let truth and love touch us and deeply transform us. Faith, then, transforms the whole person, precisely to the extent that he or she becomes open to love. Through this blending of faith and love, we come to see the kind of knowledge which faith entails, its power to convince and its ability to illumine our steps. Faith knows because it's tied to love. because love itself brings enlightenment. Let's say you love somebody. You maybe get a full understanding, maybe even for the first time in your life, about what your life is all about and what another human person is all about. So faith's understanding is born when we receive the immense love of God, which transforms us inwardly and enables us to see reality with new eyes.
Okay, here, correct me if I'm wrong. The Pope then quotes the philosopher Ludwig Wittgenstein, who puts forward an explanation of the connection between faith and certainty.
That's absolutely right. For Wittgenstein, believing can be compared to the experience of falling in love. It's something subjective, of course, which cannot be proposed as a truth valid for everybody else. In other words, if I fall in love with a person, that doesn't mean that everybody else falls in love with a person. Indeed, most people nowadays would not even consider love as related in any way to truth. But love is more connected, they would say, to emotions, but not to truth. But then the Pope, Pope Francis, wonders about this, and he asks this in a question. He says, is this an adequate description of love? He says, love is more than an emotion. Love opens us up to another person. It leads us away from self-centeredness in order to build a lasting friendship. I was with a couple last night, actually, and the love that they have for each other, you could see that he was constantly looking for her good and she was looking out for him. So it was this leading away from self-centeredness. The goal then of love is union with the person you are, not just looking out for them or helping them, but actually union with them. And here you begin to see how and why love requires truth. Only to the extent that love is grounded in truth can it endure over time. Only this way can it transcend the passing moment and be sufficiently solid, become a foundation to sustain a shared journey. If love is not linked to truth, then it falls prey to fickle emotions and can't stand the test of time. What we're saying here is, unless there is truth, there is no bond. And this is the wonderful thing. If love needs truth, truth also needs love. Love and truth are inseparable. Without love, truth becomes cold. It becomes impersonal. It becomes even oppressive. The truth we seek, the truth that gives meaning to our life, is not this kind of truth. In fact, in the Bible, the people of Israel came to understand that God is truthful and that he has a plan. He's looking out for the people of Israel. It was that truth and that fidelity in God, these things go together. The true God is the God of fidelity, who keeps his promises and makes possible in time a deeper understanding of his plan. At first, they thought that the plan of salvation was only for the Hebrew people. But later, they saw that this divine truth extended beyond the confines of their own history to embrace the entire history of the world, beginning with creation.
Now, the encyclical also talks about faith in terms of hearing and seeing. Exactly how?
Well, Pope Francis quotes from St. John's Gospel, where to believe is described both in terms of hearing and also in seeing. We need to hear and we need to see in order to know. I think of my young niece who's learning to speak at the moment. I will notice that when I speak to her, she listens to my words and she also watches my lips at the same time to see the sounds that I'm, and the shapes that I'm making. The kind of hearing in faith is when we recognize the voice of the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd, he's the one who's calling his sheep. He's calling us to follow. And remember, in the Good Shepherd in Israel and in those parts of the world, the shepherd didn't drive the sheep, but he went ahead of them and led them. In the Gospel of St. John, we notice that those who had become disciples, there's a quote from John's Gospel which says, hearing him say these things, they followed him. So the hearing and seeing going together here. But faith, for this reason, is tied to sight. Seeing the signs or the miracles which Jesus worked leads at times to faith, especially in the disciples, and indeed as in the case of the Jews, who following the raising of Lazarus, having seen what he did, they believed in him, we're told in John's Gospel chapter 11. So when people saw for themselves, they became disciples of Christ. Think of the centurion who saw Christ being taken down from the cross and exclaimed that this truly was the Son of God.
Now, hearing and seeing, are they both separate things, or is there a synthesis here?
It's possible through the person of Christ himself to see that there is a synthesis, because Christ can be seen and heard. He's the Word made flesh. He's the one whose glory we have seen. Think of the encounter, too, of the disciples after Jesus when he'd risen from the dead. With their own eyes, they saw the risen Christ and they believed. So even the disciples there, making the connection between hearing and seeing. In a word, they were able to peer into the depths of what they had been seeing, and then because of that, to move it up a level, to confess their faith in the Son of God, who is now seated at the right hand of the Father.
But can this and does this take place for us today? It would be great for us if we could, had been disciples and we could have experienced the Lord, 2,000 years ago, but we live in different times. Does the encyclical actually talk about that?
I'm really just sorry that they hadn't invented camcorders and camera phones 2,000 years ago.
But you can't always believe what you see on those either, though.
Well, that's true. There are programs you can actually change photographs and things. But here we go back to the gospel and to the reality of Christ among us. When Christ took flesh and came among us, he touched us. And through the sacraments, he continues to touch us every day. In this way, he transforms our lives by his presence among us in these sacred signs, in these realities which contain what they proclaim. He, in fact, unceasingly enables us to acknowledge and to acclaim him as the Son of God. In faith, Pope Francis tells us, we can touch him and we can receive him in the power of the grace, which we also see in the sacraments. And then in this last part, St. Augustine, it gets a quotation, because he's the one who comments on the account of the woman who was suffering from the hemorrhages, the woman who then touched Jesus and was cured. So in the Gospel of Luke, that's chapter 8, and then St. Augustine says, to touch him with our hearts, that is what is meant to believe.
A constant theme of our time is the dialogue between faith and reason. Does this encyclical also discuss that question?
It does. I think an experiment from science will help us to grasp this more clearly. We once did this test in school when we shone a light, a clear white light, through a prism and saw then the different colours that make up the white light. In the same way, once we discover the full light of Christ's love, we realise that each of the little loves in our lives have always contained a ray of his light, of his love, and then we understand its ultimate destination. We are reminded too that love, in fact, doesn't come from us, but love comes from God. The fact that our love contains only that ray of light helps us to see how all of love is meant to share in the complete self-gift of the Son of God who died for our sake. And we can say in conclusion that the light of faith illumines not only our little relationship with God, but also all of our human relationships with each other, which can then be lived in union with this gentle love of Christ.
What effect does that light of love have on us in these times, in our societies today? How does it affect our lives?
The light of love, which is proper to faith, can and does illumine the questions of our own time about truth. As we mentioned earlier, when people speak about truth, they often reduce it to something very subjective, something that they make up themselves. But if truth is a truth of love, if it is a truth disclosed or revealed in the personal encounter with others and with God, then it can be a setting free, if you like, of the enclosure that very often individuals have, allowing us to become part of the common good. This kind of truth, taking us outside ourselves, because it's born out of love, can penetrate to our own hearts, and then, of course, in a broader way, to the personal core, and indeed to the care of every man and woman.
So is the Pope saying then that faith is actually leading us or can lead us to search for God?
Absolutely. At the end of this second section, the Pope concludes with the account of the Magi who were seeking God, as indeed we all are. We remember from the Gospels how these three familiar wayfarers were led to Bethlehem by the star. And in them, these three characters, we see how faith and light are fused together. They followed the star because they had faith, and for them, God's light appeared as a journey, to be undertaken as a star, which had led them on towards this path of discovery until they found the child born in Bethlehem. Pope Francis then, in this conclusion, tells us that, religious man, you and I are also wayfarers. We must be ready to let ourselves be led by faith and by light and by truth, and in this way to come out of ourselves and to find the God of perpetual surprises.
Well, we are going to end there, but we're going to let you lead us into our next chapter for the next program. Thank you so much, Monsignor John Kennedy.
It's a pleasure, Tracy.
Okay, we'll be back to speak about chapter 3 coming up.
Okay.
Bye.